Hello, it's Patrick Cox here.
And Nina Porzucki.
Okay, Nina, did you hear what Vladimir Putin said the other day? This was pretty memorable. He was on a stage, a panel in St. Petersburg, doing a Q&A. Up on the stage with him were a few people, including the Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi and Megyn Kelly of NBC, once of Fox News. She was asking the questions.
President Putin, there are reports today in the American press that the Trump administration took active steps to ease sanctions on Russia almost immediately after Trump took office. Was this possibility ever discussed between the Trump team and your representatives prior to President Trump being inaugurated?
Наш посол с кем-то встретился.
So his reply goes on for some time, and he gets more and more kind of animated and outraged. He ends up by saying, this is what he says, this hysteria, I think he's talking about what's going on in D.C. and all of this, you know, Russia's behind the election, all of this hysteria never seems to stop. Maybe someone has a pill that's going to cure this hysteria. And then the Indian Prime Minister Modi, he starts laughing at that point. But it really, it just feels like this is Putin, Vladimir Putin.
All right.
I'm back.
Yeah. It's super interesting that this was a response to Megyn Kelly. You know, she was the recipient of Donald Trump's harshly worded criticism about, you remember from during the election campaign.
Oh, yeah. There was blood
coming out of her wherever.
You know, you could see there was blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever.
Yeah. Has Putin ever gotten close to that kind of crude talk?
He certainly, in the early days, I mean, he really took his language down to the basest of levels. We did a podcast on it a few years ago.
About his kind of vernacular, like dirty.
Yeah. And he seems to be able to code switch fairly easily between that and then sounding super presidential. Anyway, this time in the pod, Trump as Putin, Putin as Trump, and how Americans and Russians still misunderstand the words of each other's leaders.
He would do these off-the-cuff comments that were a little bit bawdy or sometimes very bawdy, folksy, you know, we'll get the terrorists wherever they are, even if we have to wipe them out in the outhouse.
This is Michelle Birdie. She writes a language column for the Moscow Times.
There was a very famous thing he said about, we don't have any problem with doing circumcisions here. You can come and we'll cut it off so that nothing will ever grow back again. It had something to do with Muslims coming to being welcome in Moscow. And it was sort of famous because the translators freaked out and they didn't know how to translate it.
If you are going to come to Moscow.
And you could hear them passing the microphone from one to the other because they froze and they just couldn't think of how to translate it.
If you would like to get a circumcision, please come to Moscow. We are a multi-confessional.
What? Like, I don't even understand that's what he's going for there.
I think he was maybe talking about people from Chechnya saying, you know, yeah, come to Moscow. We can perform circumcisions for you. We might do a little bit extra while, you know.
Okay, whatever
nasty
that.
Stuff.
And now here's Donald Trump, our president. Maybe it's not so shocking for Russians what he's saying as it is for, you know, all of us Americans to hear, like, all the coarser things coming out of Trump's mouth. Things like enemy of the people, the press being enemy of the people, and all of the other things that have been associated with him, like the tape about grabbing women by the pussy. I wonder what Russians are thinking about all of this language.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not that much. And you know what? I mean, Michelle Birdie says the Russian media may be helping a bit, too.
What I think the way they translate him a little bit to sound like Putin. All of the phrases that sound kind of snarky or even kind of childish because they're so colloquial, all the sort of terrible or sad or what a dumb deal, all of that all of that sort of gets translated into like tough talk. You know, it's like chort of a deal, that kind of hellish deal. That was the devil's bargain. At the same time, they smooth things over. So it sounds like he's speaking in a perfectly statesmanlike way, except interjecting this kind of tough talk. Whether it's unconscious or not, I don't know. But it sounds like they've kind of turned him a little bit into a Putin in the way he speaks.
It's interesting and somewhat obvious that, like, translators and the way that Trump is being translated to a Russian audience is in ways that they can understand, in ways that, like, serve the purpose.
Right, right. Putin is the template. He's the new norm.
Yeah, wow.
I mean, certainly in Russia, it does seem that they are moved by the proverbial strongman. That goes sort of back long before Putin,
right,
of course. And it might make them more comfortable to see Trump over here sort of behaving like a, you know, all-powerful autocrat, a Tsar.
Well, it's also like sort of not their president, so it's sort of entertaining. I mean, Trump is entertaining.
Well, someone who's given a lot of thought to how Russians all over the world perceive Donald Trump is Alina Simone. Here she is.
If you're like me, the child of Soviet refugees raised in the U.S., politics may not be your favorite kitchen table topic of conversation. Today I live in New York City, but I grew up in Massachusetts, where everyone I knew was a Democrat. Everyone except for my family, who always served dinner with a generous helping of Fox News. I always avoided talking about politics with my friends, and every time a presidential election rolls around, I still get defensive. But the thing is this: whatever stereotype people may have of a Republican voter, my parents aren't it. They subscribe to The New Yorker, they drive a Prius, they donate to their local public radio station. Thanks, guys. Their political affiliation seems like a paradox, but it's not, because any label you might stick them with, intellectual, refugee, Jewish, doesn't hold a candle to their actual experiences living under a far-left regime. That experience explains everything. Now, I'm not going to interview my own parents. A moratorium on politics is the only way our family is going to get through the Trump era. Instead, I sought out another Soviet emigre. Vadim Yarmolinets in Brooklyn, host of the morning show on Davidson Radio.
Нас хорошо слышно.
Davidson is New York's Russian language radio station. Over a million listeners tune in each day, according to their website. Today's topic on the morning show: was the public outcry over Trump's election really a bigger deal than Obama's?
Мне кажется, что тут стоял такой вой о том, что он родился в Африке, а не на Гавайских островах.
Didn't something analogous happen when Obama was elected? Our host Vadim says, I think so. Weren't people raging over whether he was born in Africa or Hawaii? It was in the media every day. Seriously. I'm just trying to be an objective person. A Hillary voter probably won't agree with that assessment, but Vadim's listeners, many of them voters from Brooklyn's reddest neighborhoods, certainly do. The irony is, Vadim left the Soviet Union in pursuit of the same freedoms Democrats accused Trump of crushing. Back in Odessa, Ukraine, he worked as a journalist for the local paper Komsomolskaya Iskra during the period known as Perestroika, or restructuring, right before the Soviet Union fell apart.
I was very young, and I was very much impressed by all the slogans of Perestroika, and I kind of trust them. But when it came to real life and to real journalistic work, it was obvious that they still do not allow to say a lot of things about what's going on. We do not have to talk about this. We do not have to talk about that.
And he felt squeezed by the government in other ways.
We were oppressed. I couldn't go to church in my country. I could lose my job. I have to hide from authorities that I'm a Christian.
After clashing with higher-ups at his newspaper and not knowing the Soviet Union was on the brink of collapse, Vadim left for America. His disenchantment with the political left stayed with him, though. Being the opposite of a communist is probably the biggest thing in Trump's favor when it comes to the Soviet emigre vote.
We've been through this. I know what is socialism. It's a Russian joke. You know, what is Russian striptease? It's naked shelves in the store. I've been through this. I've seen it. It was like hunger, real hunger. Like what happening in Venezuela. it is like a carbon copy of what happened in Russia.
I've had this conversation before with my parents, and this is where they tell me socialism is always a slippery slope. But this time, I decide to play devil's advocate, citing places where a form of democratic socialism seems to be working, like Denmark and Finland. That's what Bernie Sanders Democrats would say, I tell Vadim.
Oh no, we would stop at Finland. We're not going to go all the way to Venezuela. We want to get to Finland and just stop at the sweet spot.
I know. How you can be sure that we'll end up in Finland and not in Venezuela? How do you know? It's a big gamble. And with my experience, I expect Venezuela.
Ви на волні 620 AM і слушаєте Дэвидзон Радіо.
You can learn just as much about Russian-speaking immigrants and their anxieties by listening to the ads on the morning show, infomercials for immigration lawyers who will help you get working papers or refugee status.
BNV Home Care, крупнейшее агентство Большого Нью-Йорка, открыло филиал офиса на Стэттен-Айленде.
Home health aid agencies promising good salaries with benefits.
459-1900.
Soon after talking to Vadim, I meet up with Lena Antipov, both a home health aide and a refugee status seeker, and her husband, Mikhail. Back in Russia, Mikhail Antipov was better known as Mike Vivisector, frontman of the punk band, the Vivisectors. The Antipovs are about the same age as Vadim, and they felt much the same way about life under communism. But unlike Vadim, they stayed in Russia for another 20 years, witnessing the rise of Putin.
В двух словах мы просто по некоторым признакам заметили в тот момент, что начинается опять.
Михаил tells me that after a while, they began to feel like the Soviet Union was starting up again, not in the sense of 5-cent rides on the subway, but in the ideological sense that things were going to get really uncomfortable and suffocating. In early 2012, Михаил decided to collaborate on a punk song with well-known rock critic and Putin critic, Artyom Troitsky, who has also since left Russia. It's called Shapu Nana. Mikhail wrote the music and produced the recording. Troitsky wrote the lyrics and sang. Sample verse. Those bloodsuckers are busy as bees. All of them are the judo vets of KGB. Sucking and pumping and getting high, but even for them, well, the end is nigh. That message didn't go over too well. Mikhail says he started getting death threats. A few months after the song was released, the Antipovs and their two children left for the U.S. Now they joke that they traded Putin for Trump. And while many Russian immigrants view Trump as the poster child for an aggressively American brand of capitalism, he reminds the Antipovs of old-school Russian communist Vladimir Zhirinovsky. He's a longtime member of the Duma and Russia's best-known unhinged nationalist, a man who, like Trump, demonizes foreign economic migrants. But at the Russian senior home where Lena works as a home health aide, her anti-Trump views place her in the extreme minority. I was the only Russian there who was against Trump, Lena tells me. I felt really uncomfortable when everyone was talking in this aggressive way about being overjoyed, people like me were crying. It was unpleasant. The Antipovs struggle to reconcile the seeming irony of Russian immigrants voting against what some may see as their own self-interest. It's really strange, Mikhail tells me. Immigrants from the USSR, who were themselves in a similar situation, once being leaned on for similar reasons, still like it when a leader acts like a strong man. These are immigrants that are for a president who's against immigrants. But according to Lena, self-interest is kicking in. And the pro-Trump attitude at her Russian senior home has softened in the few months since he took office.
Я хочу сказать, что сейчас немножко это меняется.
She says that those who voted for Trump, older people, were assuming he really would do good things for them and their kids, but that's now been cast in doubt. With social benefits like home health aides under threat, Lena says her clients are thinking, what's going to happen now? But morning show host Vadim Yarmolinets doesn't feel like enthusiasm for Trump has dimmed at all among the Russian speakers who listen to his show. It's not that they haven't noticed the chaos swirling around the president, but these listeners,
Now they know how to filter his words. This is something we can accept. This is something, yeah, it's nonsense.
Nonsense, theater, noise. Speaking of noise, all the stuff about Russia influencing the election and secrets being leaked to Putin, neither Vadim nor the Antipovs care about that. Russians are pretty jaded about court intrigue. They don't even believe much of it. But I did wonder whether Vadim and his listeners, as immigrants themselves, ever feel any cognitive dissonance over supporting Trump? Did they feel a little guilty, like, but we made it? What if they'd done this 20 years ago and then I wouldn't have been able to come? Is there any of that?
It's an interesting thing, and I think about pretty often. But, you know, we came from a different country. Russia is free now. Some people who live in Russia, they will complain about their present-day authorities, about Putin, about this and that. Still, you cannot compare the former Soviet Union with what they have now in Russia. The life here is better. It is absolutely obvious. People want to live here, but this is the question, when to stop it, you know?
When to stop it. It's not like Vadim wants to stop it all, but he wants more limits. Last time I talked to my dad, he told me a friend had approached him, recently arrived from Iraq and caught up in the Muslim travel ban drama. He asked for a letter of support. What did you do? I asked, my heart already sinking. I knew his views on the issue. What could I do? My dad shrugged. He's a nice guy. I wrote it.
Alina Simone lives in New York. And Nina, I kind of feel like I get these Russian takes on Trump just a little bit more now. Mm. Like, just ignore the palace intrigue in Washington. We'll never know the truth. Everyone's twisting it anyway.
Truth.
And so it means that although, okay, you vote for the guy, you kind of vote for him with a bit of a shrug rather than with adulation, like showing up at mass rallies or anything. You're not like a true believer, which means that you're going to write a letter in favor of an Iraqi colleague.
Right. It's more complicated when you drill down, for sure. So, I mean, what about in Russia? I mean, how is it different in Russia than in the U.S.? How is their view of Trump evolving over the last, you know, several months that he's now been in power versus when he got elected and everybody was sort of cheering in the streets?
Yeah, well, Michelle Burdish of the Moscow Times, she had some thoughts about this. And as she says, there's the usual kind of lost in translation moments,
right,
that mean that things in Washington are just simply too opaque for people watching from their living rooms in Rostov or Omsk or somewhere like that. Here's a good one.
Sometimes I think they just have trouble. They don't know what he's talking about. So when he was talking about his Supreme Court nomination, and he said that if the Congress held up his nomination, we would go nuclear. And it was clear they just didn't know what that meant at all. So most of them said something like, you know, the Republicans still have the nuclear option in their arsenal, which made it sound like if they don't go for this nominee, we can always bomb them or something. I don't really know.
This just reminds me a lot, Patrick, of just how lost in translation both sides are. Remember the comment that Putin made about Trump saying that he was brilliant or a genius?
Yeah.
And Trump, and it totally didn't translate. It just sort of meant like
flamboyant.
I didn't mean like flamboyant. Just like
dazzling.
Shiny.
Yeah.
You know, but it didn't mean like genius in the way that Trump took it to mean. So this is sort of funny. It just happens back and forth. But that's hilarious thinking that the nuclear option is actually sort of, you know, the red button and the Congress just ready to go.
Yeah. And of course, it plays into all those, you know, Cold War fears and all of that.
Oof.
But it does look as though things in Russia are changing somewhat for Trump.
Perceptions.
Yeah.
There are places all around Russia where people would write signs on their little cafe in some tiny little town of, you know, 6,000 people that said, you know, Obama not welcome here. Well, they had on their cars, you know, Obama is a schmuck. But after, you know, really just a couple of months of Trump was going to be the answer to all of our prayers and we were going to have this wonderful relationship again. Now, again, you see people writing in their cars, you know, Trump is a schmuck. So I think it's begun to filter down to the population that maybe Trump isn't the answer to all of Russia's problems.
Well, two things. I have two thoughts. One, I just can't help but think that there's a little bit of racism behind, like, Obama is a schmuck or Obama is not welcome here. And then secondly, I think Americans are self-obsessed to the... It's sort of like we're at the opposite sort of issue. Like, we're so obsessed with ourselves that we forget the rest of the world, whereas, like, Russia... And it, the obsession with our own selves and our own kind of minutia sort of distracts us from what other things are happening in the world. It's sort of the opposite of Russia, and, like, the Russians are obsessed with, like, sort of the American issue or what's happening there that sort of distracts from the real issues at home. I think in some ways, like, we obsess about these silly, like, tweets, for example, or these other things, and it distracts us from, like, real serious issues that are happening. That's my big fear, is when we have, like, long conversations about covfefe.
That's the first time that word has been mentioned in this podcast.
Right. But, like, when we self-obsess. Yeah, let's move on. Exactly. But about this, I worry about what my big fear is, like, what else are we not obsessing? What are we missing? What is happening in other parts of the world, in our own country? I don't know. That's my fear. That's my thought.
I also think it's incredibly useful to just not just go beyond the Beltway, but beyond these shores to get some perspective on the phenomenon that is Donald Trump. You know, just to kind of get a sense from people who've had more experience with strong men than we have.
Right. So this would be a call out to listeners, I think. It would be really interesting. If you're interpreting or if you're translating Trump or another strongman or leaders in general, like, get in touch. Let's talk. I think it'd be really interesting to see how different people are viewing and through language what he's saying. I know there's been a lot of articles about this, but
absolutely no.
Not from our listeners.
Get in touch with us. Twitter is a good way too, at LingoPod. Or you can also write us an email. We have an email address. What is it?
Oh, it's at language@pri.org.
language@pri.org. We had help today from Jonathan Dyer, Kathy Merritt, Rupa Shenoy, Andrew Sussman, Tina Toby, Catherine Whalen, and Mike Wilkins.
Please review us or rate us at Apple Podcasts or wherever you hear us. It really helps.
Thanks for listening today, and we'll be back soon.